1450 AM WKXL, 1039 FM in Concord, and our new signal, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Welcome to the show. Great to have you along with us. And we are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive. They are located conveniently at 124 Store Street in Concord, serving the Concord area since 1995. You can give them a call, make an appointment right now at 225-7988. And happy to say that our guest today is the Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. That would be Anna Brown. Anna, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to join you.
Well, it's always great to have you with us. And you can find you at citizenscount.org, on Facebook. Where else, Anna?
We're on Twitter. You can see us posting occasionally on Reddit. And we also have a podcast. A new season will be starting up in January, but you can catch up on all of our episodes from the last legislative session anywhere you get your podcast. So through our website, but also Apple Podcasts and places like that.
Outstanding. And I saw today that you currently have over 208,000 community members. So you must be doing something right.
Yeah, well, that and a large number of that is our followers on Facebook. And we daily discussion posts there. So if you want to check in, things that are going on in New Hampshire, a little lesser known policy debates. I think a lot of times in the news, it hits the same headlines over and over and over again. We're always trying to dig and tease things out that maybe you haven't heard of, and you know, get those little quick hits. And if you want to throw in your 2 cents, discuss, you know, where New Hampshire is going and what's best for the state.
Well, certainly a lot to discuss. But as you know, the way it works in radio, Anna, is that we have new listeners all the time. In fact, I just mentioned the new signal we have in Manchester and the surrounding areas like Goffstown and Bedford, where they previously could not get KXL over the airwaves, but now are getting it. So just briefly, give us a capsule form version of what Citizens Count is all about.
Certainly. Citizens Count is a nonpartisan nonprofit that's dedicated to providing unbiased information about issues and candidates in New Hampshire. So a lot of people are most familiar with us from our election season candidate profiles. We send out a survey and do research on all of the roughly 900 candidates for state representative all the way up through U.S. president, if there is a presidential race. We also put all of the roughly 1,000 bills every year into plain English, organize them by topic. You can browse them on our website. And we'll regularly post other articles. And as I mentioned, Facebook posts. We have our podcast where we dive into the issues and try to give you those completely unbiased, no spin facts, go through the pros and cons, look at both sides to give people that information source that they can get involved. Because New Hampshire is a really cool state when it comes to public involvement. We have a citizen legislature. They're only paid $100 a year plus mileage. Anybody can attend a public hearing and testify. And so you've probably run into your representatives at Dunkin' Donuts and not even known it. People really can make a difference in New Hampshire. Their legislators are listening to them, but you just need to know what's going on and learn a little bit about the issues.
It is a fascinating state politically, no question about that. I don't think anybody would argue there. And to be able to put the over 1,000 bills annually in the legislature into plain English is quite an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, I tell you what, because if you go to the state legislative website, you'll get these one-sentence summaries that are just, you know, related to the road toll or something like that. They really don't tell you what they're about. So yeah, that's a really important service we offer. And in fact, they are currently releasing the bill text for 2022. They're trickling out. So we already have 99 on our website, which is probably only about 10% of what there's going to be. But people can go ahead and browse through it now. We've got a bill to prohibit police from encrypting radio. We've got one that would allow short-term health insurance. There's many related to vaccines and emergency orders related to COVID-19. So it, even though the legislative session hasn't started yet, there's a lot going on. And like I said, that those plain English summaries make it easy to browse through instead of just getting overwhelmed.
Yeah, absolutely so. And there is so much going on right now politically in the Granite State. Hard to know where to begin, so I'll throw a dart, and it'll land on this past Tuesday when Governor Sununu made the announcement that we've all been waiting for months. And I think his decision to run for a fourth term as governor surprised a lot of people, Anna.
I'll be honest, it surprised me. If I was a betting woman, I would have lost some money. I know that a lot of people in Washington, D.C., too, would have lost money. If there were, I mean, I'm a Granite Stater, so I feel like it's okay to, I can stay nonpartisan when I say I found it a little funny that people like Mitch McConnell and Rick Scott were kind of mad down in Washington. Oh, you know what? That darn Sununu doing the Granite State way first. But it set off all these dominoes that I think me and you and many other people had not really thought through. It's all right. So then who's going to be the GOP candidate for U.S. Senate? Of course, we have retired General Don Bolduc, who is already in the race. He's been running for some time. But people were lobbying immediately. They were saying, maybe we can get Kelly Ayotte, maybe we can get Scott Brown. Both of them said pretty quickly, nope, not interested, move it along. But this morning, I have seen all of a sudden it's opening wide, all right? So Senate President Chuck Morse, he was someone who was maybe going to run for governor. Evidently now he's looking at a U.S. Senate run. We also have Phil Taub, who is a longtime Republican donor. So he might be throwing his hat in the ring. I've also heard Frank Ginta, the old U.S. as in former U.S. representative, is going. I mean, the list goes on. And that's just for the U.S. Senate. We haven't even touched on what could happen in the governor's race on the Democratic side, because originally people were looking at the moving pieces. And it looks like the redistricting process, the Republicans in the legislature are controlling that. It looks like they are moving towards a map that would be very favorable to Republicans in the first district. Mm-hmm. So people are looking at Representative Chris Pappas. Maybe he would run for governor. And he hasn't indicated at all that he's interested in that, but that's a possibility. Also heard about Executive Counselor Cindy Warmington, the lone Democrat on the council. Maybe she'd throw her hat in the ring. And then this morning, the Twitter rumor mill is peddling that maybe John Lynch, maybe long-term governor John Lynch, will come out of a political retirement. So who knows?
Wow, that's interesting. I had not heard that, but there's another former four-term governor in the state of New Hampshire. So, John Lynch, who, one of the politicians, and I would have to say worked both sides of the aisle very well when he was under the Golden Dome at the State House.
I think that the other thing that why Democrats, if they could get John Lynch back, is his incredibly high approval ratings.
Yeah.
While he was in the office, you know, and I think that a lot of New Hampshire governors actually have had really high approval ratings when you consider. So John Lynch, Maggie Hassan, Governor Sununu, all really high approval ratings when they were in the governor's office. I think the question is, you know, it's easy when you're running, when you're sort of being able to lead the state and work with both parties in the legislature and really have that Granite State focus. I am wondering, we already saw a lot of ads and push from both sides trying to tie the New Hampshire governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, to Washington this year, you know, saying Democrats tying them in. Continually, I see ads that are trying to tie them into Nancy Pelosi. And then I continually see ads that were tying Governor Sununu into the national ambitions or the national narrative about abortion restrictions, for example. So those, which is not to say that what happens in Washington isn't important for New Hampshire. But in the past, I've really seen that New Hampshire politics is separate. We do have different issues that drive what is happening at the state level. I mean, the paid family and medical leave debate, how exactly that would implement it, where the revenue would come from, if there would be new taxes. That was a very uniquely New Hampshire debate in terms of how we were looking at it was going to be implemented one way or another. And so I would hope that the race this year will similarly be focused on uniquely New Hampshire issues and not get sort of tied up in things that are happening at the national level, but it remains to be seen.
All right, so let's explore why Governor Sununu made the decision he did. And he explained that he likes being a CEO and, you know, the head of the state, and doesn't want to get tied up in all the politics in Washington and the Senate and everything that gets slowed down and gets caught in the mud, as it were, in Washington at the congressional level. But he did leave the door ajar that quite possibly, he would serve in a cabinet of a Republican president if that opportunity came along. So he would go to Washington perhaps in that regard. Or do you think, Anna, that his aspirations may be even higher than that? Do you think, as we talk here in November of 2021, that Chris Sununu, may be considering a presidential run for 2024?
Maybe not 2024, maybe 2028. I do think a presidential run is absolutely a possibility on the table, because being a governor and then going to the U.S. president, that's not an uncommon route,
no.
Right? Let's look back at Bill Clinton, George Bush. This is, you know, that's something that people really get behind. I mean, even when you're looking at current Republican potentials, other than the former President Trump, Ron DeSantis down in Florida, his name gets thrown around a lot
sure.
these days.
Yeah.
So I absolutely think Chris Sununu could potentially have that in mind long term, because I think the other thing we have to acknowledge as humans is that probably the location of his family, the location of his children, was a significant consideration when he was thinking about where he's going to live. Is he going to uproot his family and take them to Washington, D.C. when his kids are still in school with their friends in their community? A few years from now, as they get older, as they go off to college, he may feel less of that pull, that need to have his family in that one central location. And yeah, I think everything he was saying about the Senate and Congress in general, saying, oh, you go down there to wait around and then getting nothing done is a victory. No, that's not for me. I like to be able to make decisions. I mean, everything he was saying was that he wants to be that person in charge. And when people asked him, I noticed his language was very careful, saying, I'm not ruling out going to Washington,
right,
just in general. So, and let's be real, the Sununu family is a dynasty in a way. They've had plenty of people, you know, whether it's his father and his connection to the Bush presidency or whatever. I mean, he does have the connections that I'm sure he could pull together a run if he wanted to. Not to mention, he has gotten a lot of coverage nationally compared to many other governors, I think, partly because, you know, New Hampshire, he was a Republican governor, which is similar to Charlie Baker and also the situation in Vermont. But nonetheless, you know, a Republican governor in sort of a blue area of New England, and his COVID policies, him sort of separating himself from Trump. He did say, of course, famously, I'm a Trump guy through and through, but he also has had no problem defending the integrity of New Hampshire's elections or opposing other policies there. So, I would not, to go back to your original question, I think that is absolutely a possibility. Maybe not 2024, but I think long-term ambitions, oh man, I'm sure he's thought about it.
So right now we have no clue as to who the Republican presidential candidates and hopefuls are going to be for 2024. I think a lot hinges on what decision Donald Trump is going to make when he makes it. And I think that's going to have another domino effect on what's going to happen with the Republicans. But depending on who it is, do you think there's a possibility that he could be a vice presidential, a running mate for the Republican presidential candidate in 2024?
I wouldn't rule it out. The interesting thing about vice presidential choices is they are often driven by sort of, you know, what's slightly different? Where can I get a different part of the country or a different policy base or something like that? So, you know, you'll see people choose a vice presidential candidate based on maybe their state. Is that a state that could be a tight state? And this might be an edge. And New Hampshire, we have seen, has been considered. It could go either way. It could go for, you know, really it has gone blue the past couple presidential elections, you know. But there's, among pollsters, there's the view that, okay, maybe not. Maybe there's potential there, especially when we look at Republicans sweeping state House, state Senate, executive council, governor's office in the last election cycle. So a potential nominee absolutely could see Sununu, not just as his benefits as a moderate and a compelling character, but also saying, New Hampshire, this could help us get New Hampshire. New Hampshire has gone blue the last couple times, but Sununu has a very high approval rating there. So once again, I wouldn't rule it out. And as you pointed out, he said specifically, maybe a cabinet position. He wouldn't rule that out. So I would say vice president would be in a similar category. And also then, once again, vice presidential is another launching pad for presidential campaigns, as we have seen many, many times.
Absolutely. Anna Brown is with us, and so happy to have her today because there is just so much going on. The Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org, and they're all over social media, so you can hardly miss them. But going back to the Senate race and who the Republican nominee will be now, to me, and I think also to his campaign, it seems like the campaign of former Brigadier General Bolduc has been largely ignored by the media.
Here's the interesting thing about Attorney General, former General Don Bolduc, retired general, I should say.
Yeah,
I think that he has been discounted a little bit unfairly because he has been laying the groundwork for this campaign for a while now. And there was a moment a few months ago where he actually got a shout out from Trump related to, you know, some comments that Bolduc had made. So I would not rule out the possibility of Trump endorsing Bolduc and then that giving him a major boost among that real Republican hardcore Trump base that does exist. And of course, when you're looking at the New Hampshire landscape in this race, it looks like, okay, there's going to be a primary probably for the Republican candidate. There usually is a primary when for whatever party is not the incumbent, right? And so that is really when you get those hardcore, that base of voters that's really more, you know, extreme tends to come out for the primaries than for the general election where you tend to get more independents and moderates. So a Trump endorsement maybe could have quite a big impact. And then, because then when you look at the other candidates who might run, I have no idea if they would have any sort of connection to Trump's campaign that would really give them that endorsement, give them that boost. That's complete speculation on my part because it's based solely on this one interaction that was basically online between Bolduc and Trump. But I think it's something to consider. And I also think that we've seen all of the Democrats in Washington right now are really struggling with their approval ratings, with people's impression of what they're doing when you're looking at inflation. You see what happened with the recent governor's race in Virginia was seen sort of as this bellwether moment. So Don Bolduc maybe was not as strong a candidate 2 years ago, but this time coming around, I think maybe he could be a much stronger candidate just because of shifting winds. Because it is true, once again, you and I talked about when you're a governor, I think it's a lot easier to have those higher approval ratings than when you're in Washington, when you're a little more separated from New Hampshire, when you're a little more associated with party movements that are much larger than one state and one person. So I wouldn't discount him. I do think that definitely the media has kind of forgotten about him sometimes or maybe ignored him a little bit, but he's not, it's not like he's one of those lesser-known candidates where people have no idea who he is and he barely has a campaign infrastructure.
Right. Of course, last time around, he was not endorsed by President Trump. His opponent was endorsed by President Trump, but not the general.
Corky Messner, yeah. Yes. And I don't remember if I brought his name up as a possibility, but his name is being thrown around this morning in terms of another person. Maybe he could be persuaded to enter the U.S. Senate race again, which, once again, it's okay. He lost last time around, so maybe it wouldn't be such a great choice such for the Republican Party. But once again, the landscape has shifted. Trump is out of office, and he really seems to, in New Hampshire, there really seems to be a blue reaction to him in terms of, you know, we have a completely blue federal delegation, and the presidential vote went to Biden. But Trump is gone. And so I think that in the most recent state elections, Democrats saw that having Trump out of office is not really, it's not necessarily helping them in terms of elections. I think that people were definitely voting sort of against Trump last time around. So Corky Messner didn't seem so strong last time, but if he runs again, landscape has changed. People might have more name recognition. Maybe after 2 years of him being around in New Hampshire, maybe also he could get a little bit rid of that carpet bagger sort of name that gets thrown around. But that's definitely something that happens in New Hampshire. Also happened with Matt Maurer's last time around. So once again, he's been kicking around here for two more years. Maybe he's seen as more of a legitimate Granite Stater than he did last time to some voters. We'll see.
Anna Brown is our guest from Citizens Count. We are presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord, serving the Concord area since 1995 here on WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Anna Brown is with us. She is the Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. And Anna, great to have you with us today on the program. So much going on, and you alluded to it earlier, and redistricting could play a major factor. The redistricting plan, as released by the Republican Party, the majority in the House and in the Senate, would seem to make the District 1 more Republican than it is right now, and seem to make District 2 more Democratic than it is right now. What's your analysis of that?
So for listeners who may not be totally familiar with the redistricting process, I'll give the brief overview, which is every 10 years we have the U.S. Census, and then all of the states have to go and redraw their districts to make sure that every district has roughly the same amount of population in it. Because, of course, people are going to move. There will be trends in terms of more births or more deaths. So you got to keep those districts roughly even so everyone has roughly the same amount of representation. The challenge comes in, how do you do that fairly? Because if you are a partisan, you can draw your districts in a way that are going to group together maybe more Republican voters, break up Democratic voters, or vice versa. Now, some states have implemented independent redistricting commissions, or they use government employees or some other method to try to get politics out of the process. In New Hampshire, it is drawn by the legislature, and Governor Sununu did veto a bill to establish an independent redistricting commission a couple years ago. And his argument was, we have a 400-member legislature. It's very connected with the people, and that's enough. You know, we elect these people to do what's right by us. And if we can't trust them to redraw our districts, you know, then the whole system is broken. So we do have a situation now where Republicans control the House and the Senate, and they get to draw the districts in a way that could be very favorable to them. And while I'm not saying that all Republicans are looking to draw the districts in a way that favors the Republican Party, we do know that Steve Stefanik, who leads the Republican Party in New Hampshire, did say that outright last year, said that we will redraw the first congressional district in a way that secures a win for a Republican, which basically means you're going to group more Republican towns under District 1, which necessarily would move more Democratic towns to District 2 and make that even safer for Democrats. Because, of course, Representative Annie Custer has really handily won the past few elections there. It's leaned very blue. And so the map that they most recently put forward pulls in more Republican towns in the southern tier, such as Salem and Windham, and then cuts out some of the towns on the seacoast. And the Republicans who put this map forward said that, well, we think it's really important to unite the southern tier in the same district, whereas Democrats say, all right, now you have a District 2 that basically looks kind of like a claw going around this random thumbprint in the middle of the state. You know, that's what is tying these random towns together, and why isn't all of the seacoast together, or why isn't the North Country now is not represented in both districts, et cetera. So it's a very, very heated, controversial situation. And I will say, though, that this proposal does not necessarily mean it's going to be the final proposal. There is a committee working on this whole process, taking public testimony, and then the maps have to go through the legislature just like any other bill. So they have to pass the House, have to pass the Senate, have to get signed by Governor Sununu. Governor Sununu has said he won't sign any map that doesn't pass the quote-unquote smell test, but I think we can all agree the smell test is not a mathematical formula. So, I mean, it remains to be seen what he would mean by that. And then beyond that, there's a potential for court cases, and we have seen that in the past couple redistricting cycles. There have been lawsuits about how these districts may or may not equally represent different groups. So it's we are right in the middle, or rather right at the beginning of the process, I should say, because it's once again, the maps are just getting drawn. We're getting public input. The legislative session hasn't even started where they're voting on them. So it is very tricky. The current map that I was talking about, where it's, they pull in some of those southern tier towns and then cut out some of the seacoast towns, move them into District 2, we would get a one district, District 1 being very Republican, and then District 2 being very Democrat. So we are seeing a situation where, yeah, it might not be so favorable to Representative Chris Pappas, a Democrat, the current representative, running in District 1, which is why some people speculate about him running for governor, although he hasn't said it. But then District 2, it would be very difficult for Republicans ever to run. And, you know, when you look at businessman Jeffrey Cousins, for example, has been talking about running there. People have asked him, you know, would that deter you? And he says, well, no, I think Custer is vulnerable. And also, this is my home. But footnote, here's an interesting fact people may not know. You do not have to live in the U.S. House district you would run to represent. So technically, regardless of how the maps are drawn, someone could live in one district and run for you in the U.S. House in the other. You just have to be a representative of New Hampshire to run, or resident of New Hampshire, I should say, to run for Congress. So that's a little tricky one that sort of makes me scratch my head sometimes. You know, I get that New Hampshire is a big place and, you know, you live in New Hampshire, that's close enough, I guess. But it is kind of funny to me that you don't actually have to live in the district you would represent.
You know what? I think a lot of people learned something right there, Anna, including myself. I thought that you did, by law or whatever, state edict, had to live in the district. But now I've learned something new, and I'm sure others have as well. See, that's why we have you on these shows. I mean, you're just a fountain of great information. So, what is there a deadline to the redistricting? When does it have to be completed? When is it going to go for a vote?
So the House has to put together their draft map through this committee process that's ongoing right now with the public hearing before the legislative session starts in January. And so I believe the formal official deadline to submit the maps is in late November. But like I said, they can revise the map in the legislative process if necessary when these bills go through next year. And so here's the other thing. I mean, we have seen, because you can't discount what's going to happen with Sununu. He can be an unpredictable guy. So theoretically, the bills would have to go through and be signed before candidates start filing for 2022, which happens in June. So it would really that says, you know, there it is. It has to happen in the first few months of 2022. But if Sununu vetoes, if there are court challenges that gain steam, it could be put off. And then worst case scenario, they'd use the old map, the current maps, I should say, current districts for the 2022 elections. And then it would have to finish going through courts and whatever else. And then the new maps would be in place for 2024. But this is really the critical moment in terms of, you know, they're going to hit the ground running with this as soon as the legislative session starts in January.
And yeah, people have to make decisions. Obviously, if the redistricting situation is still up in the air when the filing takes place in June, then you know you have to wonder what someone like Chris Pappas is going to do. He would have to make a decision whether he's going to run for re-election in District 1 or perhaps make a gubernatorial run.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And realistically, in general, the election is only 1 year away. And yeah. New Hampshire's primary is next September, so it's less than a year away.
Yeah.
So these candidates are going to have to make moves, make decisions really quickly here. And I would expect that you will have announcements about their intentions probably before Christmas. I would imagine before Christmas, we're going to know, all right, what is Pappas doing? Is Cindy Warmington jumping into the gubernatorial race or not? And then who's that U.S. Senate candidate going to be? And this Twitter rumor that I have seen this morning, will former Governor John Lynch be making his comeback? We'll see.
It should be. It's going to be. It's always interesting, but really things are heating up now. And boy, I'll tell you, we'll be talking presidential primary in the not too distant future if we haven't started that already.
Oh yes,
yeah. But
that usually starts right after the midterm.
Yeah, right. No, exactly, and certainly here in New Hampshire and in Iowa for sure. We talked about District 2. You did, and Annie Custer. She's kind of entrenched there, but could there be any Democratic opposition to her in District 2?
Well, there. If you look at the FEC, with the Federal Election Commission, you can see who has actually filed their paperwork saying, I'm going to run as a candidate. And there was a Democrat that had filed their paperwork against Annie Custer, but they've since said, yeah, no, I'm not going to run against Custer. You know, that was just kind of seeing, you know, how things were going to play out and what was going to happen with the districts. And then on the Republican side, we do have businessman Jeffrey Cousins, who already has the support of Governor Sununu, and he said he's running. He's very much embedded in the community there. So, you know, we had that conversation about how you don't have to live in District 2
right,
necessarily
yeah.
to run in District 2. He does live in District 2. So I think that he could definitely have a lot of sort of groundswell support, I should say. And then the other candidate that I've seen is State Senator Harold French, mm-hmm. who also says that he's interested in running against Annie Custer. And his hometown of Canterbury could be moved to the first congressional district. It depends on what happens with this redrawing of the maps. And it has yet to be finalized, but the way it is now, it could be moved. Franklin, his former residence, would also be moved from the second district to the first district. So that's a little tricky. But so he has been in the past part of the second district, so he would have some sort of recognition there going. He's a long-term state legislator. But I haven't seen any of those. This is sort of funny. This is sort of interesting. I haven't seen any of those out-of-state candidates sort of parachuting into the second district. And I use that hesitating. I don't want to sound biased, but it is true that the first district has had a lot more candidates who are not those long-term New Hampshire residents. They're people who lived in New Hampshire at a time and then went and had campaigns or businesses or political careers in Washington, D.C. or other states, and then they came back. So I'm looking at, you know, the Matt Mowers and the Corky Messners and people like that. That it seems to happen a lot in District 1 on the seacoast in that area, but not so much in District 2. So at this point, like I said, it does look like it's going to be Harold French and Jeffrey Cousins challenging Annie Custer. And I think that it would be very challenging to take her down if the redistricting does move more Democratic towns to the second district. But once again, as I said, we are seeing that the Democratic Party in general is really struggling right now with low approval ratings for whatever reason you want to go into that, whether you think it's inflation or President Biden or the failure to pass more progressive policies, maybe. Some people argue that Democrats are having low poll numbers because they're not going far enough to the left. Whatever it is, right now it is a challenging time. But like I said, District 2, it's looking like it's going to be pretty safe for Democrats.
This would be more in regard to the senatorial race, but you know a name we haven't heard much recently anyway, and that is Corey Lewandowski. Where does he stand at the moment?
Well, Corey Lewandowski, I have not seen his name thrown around for any of these current New Hampshire races. And that may be, he sort of seems to be a little bit on the outs, I would say. So I haven't seen his name being thrown around at all, really saying that he's going to be running for anything in New Hampshire. And in fact, I haven't really seen his name thrown around that much for endorsements either.
Yeah, I know he's embroiled in a few different lawsuits, so that might have something to do with it.
That would be my guess. But I don't want to speculate.
Well, I have a couple more questions, Anna, if you can hang with us for a couple more minutes. And
always.
Our guest today is Anna Brown, and she is the Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org, on Facebook, and a whole lot of other places. She has a podcast as well, and she's probably the most informed person in the state when it comes to just about anything. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord, serving the Concord area since 1995. And you can hear the program on WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and now 101.9 FM in Manchester. WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Welcome back. Anna Brown is our guest on the program, and Anna is the Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. Check them out. There is so much information on that website. It is beyond belief. You can check out all your representatives in the House and in the Senate, and it's just a great resource and articles from many, many local newspapers and websites. So, Anna, it's always a wealth of information, as are you. And earlier this week, we learned that the Executive Council has reversed its rejection of $27 million in federal money in terms of battling COVID, and did accept $22.5 million in CDC funding. Did you see that coming?
This is an interesting story. This is a very interesting story how this happened. So this, for people just to remember, the Commissioner Lori Chivinet of the Department of Health and Human Services brought forward before the Executive Council, can we accept $27 million in federal contracts for vaccine distribution. She had the backing of Governor Sununu, and there were very, very controversial protests from people who were anti-mandate or anti-vaccine, and they were concerned. They said language in the contracts would bind New Hampshire to enforcing federal vaccine mandates. The New Hampshire Attorney General came in and said, nope, that's not true. Nonetheless, four executive counselors, all of them Republican, voted against this funding. Afterwards, Commissioner Chivinet and Governor Sununu said, as a result of this, it's going to delay vaccine distribution to children, age 5 to 11, people who are homebound, other elderly people maybe who need more boosters. So it was really, really controversial. These protests shut down one of the executive council meetings. There were 9 arrests at another executive council meeting. And then all of a sudden, at the executive council meeting this week, they brought the funding back up. But it was not on the online agenda. It was a late addition. And the counselors, it was 4 counselors voting in favor this time, 3 Republicans, and then once again the Democrat, Cindy Warmington, and then Counselor Ted Gatsis, the former Manchester mayor, said he was just going to vote present, so basically abstaining from the vote, and it went through. And so there's one thing, the Republicans who changed their vote say they did so because they added a resolution, which is basically just a statement of opinion. It doesn't have the binding force of law, but it was a resolution that said, all right, the Executive Council sort of rejects the federal vaccine mandate. They would like to make the vaccine registry in New Hampshire opt-in instead of opt-out, a couple other things like that. But like I said, a resolution is basically just a statement. It's not a law. You can't sue someone based on a resolution like that. So this is interesting because, first of all, 3 of the Republicans changed their vote. Second of all, it was this last-minute addition, so no one really saw it coming from the outside. And then, actually, Counselor Ted Gatsis made some interesting comments about he didn't like how it was brought forward. He said that he saw this resolution in his inbox the night before at 11 p.m. when he said, I'm usually asleep, and people didn't hear about it ahead of time, and then are we going to be adding these sort of resolutions, statement of opinions, anytime a controversial contract comes forward. And so that's kind of why he said he was just going to vote present and abstain from the vote. And then Councillor Warmington said that this is political theater. Why do we have this resolution that has no effect of law. This is just political cover for a contract that we should have voted through the first time around. And then you've got people who opposed the contract originally, those protesters who are saying, wow, way to do this in the least transparent way possible. But then, you know, also Governor Sununu and Laura Chivinet say, great, we can move forward. We can start improving our vaccine collection data. This is the money we need. But here's the catch. So that was all a very interesting sort of political moment, how they got that through. It still has to go through a legislative committee. It still has to get approval from that legislative finance committee. So they're going to have to bring the contract up again there. And it will be very interesting to see. Is there going to be a sort of late addition, the same way we saw with the executive council, where there'll be some other maybe resolution or something like that? I think that it may be harder to get it through that legislative committee than it was to get it through the executive council, because state representatives, as opposed to executive counselors, there's more of them. They can be a lot more diverse in opinion. You know, there's only 5 executive counselors. That could be easier for the governor maybe to work with them and come up with this sort of compromise plan with the resolution. State representatives, you're going to get a lot more diverse opinions over there. And certainly the governor has had some trouble dealing with those people before. So, it remains to be seen if this contract will go all the way through with the legislature. But it was a very interesting change of vote.
What would be the hesitancy in accepting this money from legislators? I mean, what would be their hesitancy in doing that?
Well, several legislators disagree with the Attorney General's statement that this would not have any impact on New Hampshire having to enforce the federal vaccine mandate. There are also other legislators who are against the vaccine, who believe that the state should not be any part of promoting the vaccine. And there was some controversy with that, with one member, Ken Weiler, who distributed a report that included a lot of crazy conspiracy theories. And I feel okay saying crazy conspiracy theories because, among other things, it said that there's 3 popes and, you know, that there were transhuman babies with all black eyes and some things like that are very easy to refute, that are definitely not true. They're conspiracy theories. And he said he hadn't read the whole report when he sent it out. Nonetheless, it caused a lot of controversy. So there's a lot of misinformation going around about vaccines and a lot of controversy about whether the state should be involved in accepting federal funds when a lot of these Republicans are just very against everything the federal government is doing with vaccines, and they don't want to have any sort of tie-in in terms of if we take the federal dollars, what are we on the hook for? And as I said, the Attorney General said that's not the case, but several state representatives just disagree with that interpretation.
Never a dull moment in New Hampshire, is there?
Never, especially in the past couple years, I tell you.
That is so true. And with over 700 bills already filed, the legislative session is going to be very, very busy, without question. And Anna, I know you will keep folks on top of that on citizenscount.org and on the Facebook page and all your platforms. And again, how can people access your podcast?
So you can find it on our website. We have a link from our navigation bar to the podcast. The podcast name is $100 plus mileage, $100 plus mileage, which is what legislators are compensated each year in New Hampshire. So you can also find us on Apple Podcasts and other places wherever you listen to podcasts.
Anna, as always, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Ken.
All right. Take care. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Anna Brown, I think the most informed person in the state of New Hampshire, at Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. It is WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, and now 101.9 FM in Manchester. Welcome back. We're heading down the home stretch on WKXL 1450 AM, celebrating 75 years of broadcast service to the greater Concord area. 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM, in Manchester. And a reminder that you can listen to all of the terrific programming you might have missed or perhaps want to hear again on nhtalkradio.com. Of course, WKXL in the Morning with A.J. Kierstead and Beyond Politics, many great shows from Matt Robeson and 2-time U.S. Representative Paul Hodes, the New England Take, some of the Sheldon and Kale programs, In Touch, Artful Living, The Press Pass with Chris Ryan, and facing the future. You can always stream WKXL live on nhtalkradio.com. Thank you very much for being with us today.